This is Jerry Wilmot bringing you London Column. London Column, which brings you items especially chosen for your interest and entertainment in the worldwide service of the BBC. In this edition of London Column, we bring you a picture of the way in which Their Majesties King George and Queen Elizabeth and the two royal princesses have been welcomed throughout their tour of South Africa. You will hear from an officer in the Royal Engineers how the British Army is tackling the bitter battle of the Fenland floods. Finally, Stephen Grenfell, our man on the spot, visits a special school in southwest London where refugee children from Nazi concentration camps are courageously tackling their own particular problem of rehabilitation. For the past 2 months, Britishers in this snowed-up, ice-bound island have received a certain amount, let us say, of vicarious satisfaction in following the progress of the Royal Tour in the Union of South Africa, whose day-to-day events have been as fully reported as possible in our paper ration press. Through these reports, many of us have gained a greater knowledge of the rich farmlands of the Cape, of the thousands of miles of fertile plains, of the bushlands, and the rugged mountain ranges. Above all, we feel we have a greater understanding of the peoples of this subcontinent, for more vivid than the written word, we've heard broadcast each week sound pictures of their joys and their problems and of the way in which they live from day to day. Although the internal problems of South Africa, both racial and economic, are formidable, it is clear from this tour that whatever their political beliefs, the people of South Africa welcome the King and Queen of England not only from a traditional sense of hospitality, but with a real feeling of personal devotion. Listen now as our correspondent Robert Dunnett tells you of the preparations made to greet the royal family when they arrived in Swaziland.
The Swazis have been traveling for days from their kraals in the mountains and in the high veld grazing lands in the north of the country towards the village of Hoedskraal in the south, where they will greet the royal family. I've just spent 3 days traveling through Swaziland from Hoedskraal up to the capital of Imabane, and on the way we passed many groups of warriors heading south. These people reflect something of the wildness of this country with its sharp, rocky mountains, its crocodile-infested rivers, and the lurking danger of the deadly black mamba snakes in the roadside grass. Many of these tribesmen heading for the royal gathering wore loincloths of skins and vivid red scarves slung across their chests and over one shoulder. And they carried oxhide shields and light glittering spears, which they'd raise in greeting as we went by. These are warriors from the Impi, or regiments, whose history goes right back to the days of tribal warfare. And they will greet the king with an ancient ceremonial dance and chant reserved exclusively for royalty.
And this is typical of the way in which their majesties are being greeted throughout the length of the Union, from impressive ceremonies in the large cities to informal gatherings in the smallest villages. Our correspondent visited one of the mission schools in Swaziland and found the Swazi principal busily rehearsing his choir in a song of welcome which he'd specially written and composed for the great occasion.
The children at the big mission school on the border of Swaziland, where the King and Queen will enter, are rehearsing for a special welcome that they have directed by the principal of the mission. He leads them, saying a phrase, and they come forward, prancing and chanting a reply, and then he says another phrase, and they come forward, they go backwards, away from him, looking rather frightened, and chanting another reply, and then they end up with a song of welcome. He's saying, where are the king and queen? And they're saying, there they are, there they are. And he says, kill them. And they say, no, we're afraid, we respect them far too much. And they retreat and go back. And then they break into their song of welcome.
Ingwenya,
The reaction of their majesties to these tumultuous receptions can be best summed up in the king's words to General Smuts in Pretoria, the administrative capital of the Union. I thank you, and through you, the people of the Union of South Africa, for an experience that has been as heartwarming as its recollection will, I believe, be everlasting. His Majesty went on to say that his only unhappy memory of his tour would be his constant anxiety for the ordeals which his people at home in Britain had endured during his absence. Back in Britain, we hoped that the flooding in the Fenlands had passed its peak, that the worst was over. Then a new flood threat developed because the Bedford River began to eat away its banks. Our reporter Douglas Willis talked to an army engineer who was one of many on the job in this area.
The danger to the dike was first noticed this morning when Captain Peter Hartley of the Royal Engineers went out in a duck and had a good look all along its length. And here's Captain Hartley's report.
I just completed a duck recce of the east bank of the New Bedford River. The wind at the present time is very high and is blowing from the southeast, and as a result, the waves are breaking against the back of the dike and the erosion's now getting pretty serious. Now, we've got a party down there who've been working all yesterday and last night on the job, and they're present there just coping with the situation. But we're now going to get some further men down there, and as a result, I think we shall be able to prevent the erosion getting any worse. The main trouble is that all our stores, the sandbags and coir matting and netting, which are being used to stop the erosion getting any worse, they all have to be ferried over the floodwater from Sutton Village in ducks. And this high wind is a pretty grim job for drivers to drive through these ways. Ways are breaking about 4 foot high over the front of the ducks. And as a result, they're only doing about 3 or 4 knots. But anyway, as usual, we shall get over the situation.
Is this new departure today after yesterday's fine weather a disappointment to you?
Well, no, we have been expecting it, and as a result, we got our people, many reserves, rested as we could last night, so that if any situation like this broke today, we could get down to it and get fresh men on the job.
The Army and relief teams in general are doing a magnificent job in our flooded areas, and money and food and clothing are pouring into the relief centers. We still have a more difficult job ahead of us to reclaim the thousands of acres of flooded land. It's a heartbreaking task, but the farmers know they can expect some form of government aid and that there'll always be a ready helping hand from their more fortunate neighbors. Contrast this with the plight of the 700 homeless orphans from Nazi concentration camps who arrived in this country, their families scattered, their knowledge of English pitifully scanty. People were kind. Donations of money and clothes came to them through the Central British Fund for Jewish Relief, but it was only their own courage which brought about the state of affairs that Stephen Grenfell found when he visited one of the special schools for their training and rehabilitation in southwest London. First of all, our man on the spot talked to Mr. Levenick, headmaster of this trade school, and asked him to explain the work that is going on there.
Our school is doing engineering and for girls dressmaking. We have courses in general engineering, we have courses in tool making, we have courses in electrical engineering, and partly in woodwork. The girls can take part in our dressmaking courses.
Mm. Well, I've seen some of the stuff you've turned out this morning.
Tell me, it's excellent stuff. Have these people ever done this before, or is this a completely new life to them?
They haven't done anything of this kind before. Actually, they haven't even been at schools. Most of them came to our place having been in schools only for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we had to start from scratch. We had to teach them not only the language. Most of them have been here only for 6 months before they came to our place. Mm-hmm. Some of them not even this. And we had to start them arithmetic, science, and of course all the engineering theoretical knowledge which is necessary to do their job.
After that, Stephen Grenfell chatted with some of the pupils at the school. Here he is with David Epstein, aged 18, from Czechoslovakia.
What are you doing? What's the overalls for? What are you, an electrical engineer or a blacksmith or what?
Well, I'm in the filing department because I'm learning general engineering. But now, for 1 month, we are a group here, seven boys. We are for filing only filing exercises, but because it's important for general engineering filing also.
What do you want to be when you're a grown man? What sort of an engineer? Man who builds bridges or dams or railways or what?
Well, I don't know what it will be, but I hope that...
What country do you hope it will be in?
I hope that it will be in Palestine.
You want to go to Palestine?
Yes.
Visiting a different section of the school, Stephen Grenfell found Polish-born 17-year-old Miriam Folks in the dressmaking department.
What are you doing here in London? What is your actual job in this school? What are you learning?
I'm learning dressmaking.
Had you ever done any before?
No, I didn't do
it. What sort of dresses are you making?
Oh,
good ones?
Just pretty good.
Lots of ideas of your own, have you?
Quite a lot.
You want to be a dressmaker, do you?
Yes, I would like to.
What, in London or in America?
Well, I would love to go to America, but I haven't got any relations there.
But you will perhaps be able to get in with a quota, won't you, sometime? Even if you haven't got relations.
I haven't got any relations there.
Well, if you don't get to America, you must set up as a dressmaker here in the West End of London and make a lot of money.
Mr. Montefiore, honorary treasurer of the Central British Fund for Jewish Relief, who was largely responsible for bringing these children to Britain, was visiting the school that day.
Now, Mr. Montefiore, perhaps you'd tell me when the scheme started and how it started and what your difficulties were and how you overcame them. The scheme started when I was in Paris in 1945. Just before the end of the war.
Right.
And I saw some of the prisoners from Buchenwald being flown in direct by air to the Bourget. And I was terribly shocked. They were in the most terrible condition. And I wondered what we could do to give some help for these ex-internees.
Just tell me to begin with, your particular association, what are its objects and what does it do? What's its general work, apart from this particular scheme?
It tries to help all the Jewish displaced persons in Europe, helps them to rehabilitate themselves, and also to emigrate them.
And where do you get your money from?
The money is all got from the Jewish community in this country.
Do you get any contributions from Jewry abroad anywhere?
Not yet, no. This has been purely the effort of the Jews in England, in Great Britain.
Now, what have you done with your 700 children so far? I mean, have you trained them for different trades in your rehabilitation? Have you sent any abroad?
A few have gone. Quite a number of these boys and girls who've come to this country have relatives still living in America. And we have had a great many affidavits. About half of them, I should think about 300 out of the 700 here, have had affidavits sent. But it so happens that most of them are on the Polish and Czech quota, which is very small, and therefore there'll be a long period of waiting before they get their visas.
Ending on a question mark, but with the confident belief in these youngsters' ability to get on in the world, we say thank you, Stephen Grenfell, and the best of luck to you all at the trade school, Roland Way. This is your narrator, Jerry Wilmot, closing London Column. This program was written and produced by Peggy Broadhead.